evening, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here with you guys. And I guess we're on the fifth step. Is that right? We got that right? Okay. I don't plan a lot about what I'm going to say when I get up here because I really wanted to sort of like be as transparent as possible with y'all. I have a sort of idea of what I want to get into, but the funny thing happens to me sometimes. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 19... 81? Yeah, I'm 65. Give me a break, you know? But in any event, so I've been around for a while. I've sponsored a lot of guys and been doing this thing for a while. I mean, if you don't... I don't really need to take notes. If you haven't figured it out after 33 years, or figured out something, I don't do it perfectly. I don't pretend to do it perfectly. I'm still working on it myself and trying to. I surround myself. I have sponsors and mentors that have. My sponsor is 57 years. The Big Book encourages church membership. As a lot of you guys know, I go to church and I've aligned myself with it. You know, the Big Book says we're not aligned with any sect, denomination, religion, but, you know, I pretty much had to get aligned. I personally had to get aligned. The church encourages church. The book encourages church membership, and in my what you would probably call an 11th step sort of work, where you're trying to improve your conscious contact, I allowed myself for that deal. So, you know, I probably go to more meetings now. Every day is for me is packed with AA stuff. I have lunch every day with a lot of guys I sponsor and stuff like that. We have like a lunch list and the text goes out. And every day I'm either at a meeting or I'm in a Bible study or, you know, I mean, every day of the week I'm involved in the stuff we're talking about or working with some group or some fellowship or some way doing this deal. And it's not work for me. It's a great pleasure for me to do this sort of stuff. I want to do it. And at the same time, you know, I'm married for 33 years, got 4 kids, 6 grandkids, and I have a law office in Miami. I have no idea how I get it all done. It's pretty simple. It sort of fits in pretty simply with my life. And I was told many, many years ago, 33 years ago, that AA's got to be the most important thing in your life. And in my mind, AA now has become the same thing as God, being the center of your life, being the centerpiece of your life, like it says in the Big Book. It says the great fact is this and nothing less, that we've been rocketing in the fourth dimension of existence, we've experienced much of heaven, and the central fact of our lives is that God lives in our hearts and minds in a way which is indeed miraculous. He's come to do for us what we can't do for ourselves, and I'm pretty much sold out on the idea. I'm close-minded on this, don't try to change me, that God's done whatever transforming power has happened in my life to change me from what I used to be into what I am right now has come from God's Spirit. So I'm pretty much sold out on that deal. And you don't have to be sold out on it. That's just, it's our stories that disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened. And this is just my story and my deal. I might get a little controversial tonight. I don't know, maybe not. I don't know, we'll see how it goes. I'm not necessarily trying to be. You know, if I offend somebody, you need to talk to your sponsor about that. You know, they say the spiritual axiom is whenever we're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So, sometimes in AA, if you're a crazy sort of guy like me with crazy thinking, your best thing to get you in here. Sometimes you need to be confronted by people that offend you. You know, reality can be offensive to an alcoholic. You know, when you're talking to most of the times that people tell alcoholics, most of the times most alcoholics who are approached by sober, and I don't mean sober physically, I mean sober mentally. Most alcoholics who are acting alcoholically, who are approached by people who are soberly thinking in an effort to try to guide them in the right directions, most of the times when these people approach people like us, alcoholics, and tell them something that's good and righteous to help them out, most of the time it ends up offending the alcoholic. So chances are if you're offended by something somebody said to you, they're probably right and you're probably wrong. You can go by that, you know, because my best thinking and my best day got me in here. And the funny thing that happens to me is, you know, I trust God to sort of like put the words in my mouth. And generally what happens is I'll be going through a day and I know this thing is coming up and something will happen. in my life. You know, something will happen in my life. When I first came to AA, the first year, two, three, 5 years, whatever it is, when you're working these steps and they're so unusual and they're so different and it's a different way of approaching things, they seem like distinct entities, you know, like the first step is distinct from the second, which is distinct from the third to the fourth. And as you're living life, you almost, you sort of force yourself to do them. You sort of force yourself to do them. And you even say things like, well, this happened and I turned it over. You know, or I had to do a 10th step on that one, or I had to do a 4th step on that one, or I had to do a 3rd step on that one, or I had to do an 8th step on that one, or I met this guy and blah, 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 and I did a 12th step on that one. I mean, you look at your life as sort of like, you know, different exercises. You go through life, you're doing like a 4th step and a 3rd step and a 5th step. But as you're doing these things over and over again and going through life, you know, the first year, the second year, the 10th year, the 11th year, the 15th year, the 30th year, you don't think of that. You just live your life. It becomes sort of fluid. And it gets to the point where they all sort of mush into each other. You know, each one, and as you live your life and as you talk and walk and breathe and do everything else, it's not like you're doing a 4th step, a 3rd step. You're just living your life. And every principle and every step is involved in everything you do. And what happens is you start connecting dots. You know, you just sort of start connecting the dots on these steps. And you sort of see clearly, you know, one of the things that the old time Dr. Bob and the good old timers, I sort of fancy myself, there's a great essay, I've sent it to some of you guys, and if you want it, I'll send it to you, called Strong Cup of Tea, which was written, I think, in the 1970s, having to do with weak AA versus strong AA. And they had what I call strong AA between 1935 and 1939, 1940, and a little bit above that. And I like to fancy myself in that kind of mold right now in my life. And I started off like everybody starts off, and sort of like the la-di-da, sort of dilettante, sort of like take what you like and leave the rest kind of thing. And this is my program, this is your program. But as the road got narrower and I went along, and I had the 5 years and the 6 years and the 7 years, and I had the pull and shove that you get from life and the vagaries of life and the diversions. You know, Bill Wilson, when he drank, he said, "Soon worldly clamors, mostly within myself." You know what he's talking about the shit out there, you know. You know, took me away from here, and I drank again. As I tried so hard to raise a family with three girls and one boy and grandkids and working a job and doing all that with all the stuff that goes along with that and all the problems that goes along with that and everything that keeps you up at night and still try to work a program and not go crazy and blow my brains out and not drink and try to juggle the whole mess. You know, I felt myself being pulled in many different directions, and through the grace of God, I focused on that deal. I focused on that deal with a lot of help from people and focused on that deal. Stayed on the conveyor belt, and as I did that, I got more and more entrenched in the AA way of life, which led me to, as I said, I belong to a church and to different fellowships, and so that my life has been built basically walking down this narrow, and the road actually, in a strange sense, gets narrower and narrower. It gets less play, but the funny thing is, I'm freer and freer. I feel freer and freer within myself. And it says, one of the things it talks about in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers is the three books that they studied that they felt was absolutely essential is the Sermon on the Mount, 1 Corinthians 13, and the book of James. In the 1 Corinthians 13, it says, "When I was a child, I spoke like a child. When I became a man, I put childish things away. I started thinking childishly, I put childish things away." You know, in the 6th step, we talk about separating the men from the boys. And it says, we see through a glass darkly, but eventually, if we do this thing right, things start sort of clearing up for us, and we start seeing things, we start discerning. We're given the gift of discernment. We start discerning who we really are, what we really are, and you can actually see the world differently, maybe a little bit clearer, you know what I mean? And when you can see the world clearer, you don't step into the physical and spiritual potholes. You don't find yourself getting into a lot of trouble. You know, I used to get into all these problems and all these troubles and all these intricate things that were so hard to figure out, and you know, I never quite realized that 90% of the stuff I was getting myself involved in, I was volunteering for. And I'd be sitting here saying, "How did I get into this crummy job? How did I get into this crummy relationship? How did I get into this problem with the money?" And it was like I was volunteering for it. You know what I mean? It was. I'm the one who chose to do this, to go there, to hang out with these people, but I didn't see that. You know, I just saw myself as a victim. So. as things go along, things start clearing up. As things start clearing up, you find yourself getting less and less in trouble spiritually and physically, and life gets a lot easier. And so what happens is, I happen to be, so you sort of see how the steps are interconnected with a whole lot of things in your life and problems you used to have and the way things are going right now. And it so happens before I came here, I got a call from a sponsee who had a problem. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about the problem and the situation, but I've seen this many, many times before. And you know, when sponsees, it's wonderful to work with sponsees. You know, sponsees are crazy. You know, the way I look at a sponsor, the way I look at a sponsor-sponsee relationship is if I sponsor you, I figure you're out to kill me. It's a dog-eat-dog world, you know. I forget, they're out to kill me. They want to see me drunk. They want to see me dead. And I know one of us is going to drink, and it ain't going to be me. You know what I mean? It's going to be you. You call me up in the middle of the night, say, I feel like drinking. I say, I think you should, and I hang up the phone. That's it. You survive. You're good to go. I don't have to worry about you. You drink, you know, it ain't my problem, you know. I don't, you know, that's the deal. I don't take a whole lot of burden on, you know. I don't fire sponsees. I don't fire them. I figure they'll commit suicide. You know, why bother? I don't need that shit on my mind or anything like that. But I've sponsored really, literally hundreds of men. So what this guy called me up about was actually something that I've seen 100 times in AA. And I know this sounds, I don't mean to sound like a know-it-all, you know, and all that sort of stuff, but you know, when you've been doing the same thing, you know, I've been dealing with alcoholics for like, you know, 50 years. I am an alcoholic, you know, I mean, active alcoholics. And I've been dealing with, as a sober alcoholic, sponsoring people for 33 years. It's very hard to deal with alcoholics for 33 years, going through these steps and sponsoring hundreds and hundreds of people and not learning something and not seeing something and seeing some sort of patterns. So I happened to see, this guy called me up tonight and told something, and said something to me. Told me about a little problem, whatever the heck it is, and I said what I said to him, and what I said to what I thought about is, I started seeing the disease, how the disease works. I started seeing a consequence of the disease and why people go out, and not only did I see a consequence of the disease, I saw how it relates to an aspect of something that the fifth step deals with. So I figured I'm going to share that a little with you tonight. And it has to do with loneliness and fellowship. And it has to do with feeling isolated and being separated versus feeling feeling like you belong and feeling connected. Okay? And you know, there's a line in the big book that says, and I hope this all sort of fits together, but you know the great thing about this deal is, and I learned this a long time ago, I don't have to do much explanation because it's like the chicken on the roof story, which a lot of you have heard. The bottom line is that if your heart is ready, if the pupil's ready, the teacher appears, and I just say a few things, and you'll put it together in your mind, whatever it is you're going to supposed to hear, you'll sort of supply the rest. The Lord will supply the rest, because I do believe in God, and I believe in the Holy Spirit, and I believe that if you want this thing, He's going to give it to you, you're going to get something out of it no matter what I say, and it's going to work out. So I'm going to throw a whole lot of shit against the wall, you know what I mean? And I use the word shit so you know you're actually not in church, you know what I mean? This is AA. Although it can get churchy at times. I quote scripture and I do that stuff too, but you know. In any event, but the bottom line is, so I'm going to share a whole bunch of things, like Pulp Fiction, and they're going to look like they don't have anything to do with anything, and I'm going to mash them together in like a milkshake and you can figure it out. You'll sort it out. But I assure you that there's a method to my madness, okay? I'm going to tell you a story that I might have told before in here. If I did, it's okay, because there is something I'm going to tie it into something, a personal story, because personal testimony is important. As you know, there's a saying in the big book, I think it's in the big book, 12 and 12, it says, unless until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, get that word, in all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious and a true happiness will find none at all. Now, you don't really want precarious sobriety. Now, if you've been around here long enough, and maybe you haven't been around here long enough, what you'll discover is that people drink after 5, 10, and 15 years. That people will drink after 20 years. You'll find people in here that have 20 years sobriety and are still feeling sorry for themselves, feel like victims, they have a messy life, and things don't seem to be going well for them. In other words, you can be physically sober and have precarious sobriety or getting ready to drink or have all sorts of problems. And you know, we sit around and we try to scratch our heads and say things like, you know, because we don't want to drink. So we say, why does a person drink? We try to figure out, especially if you're sponsoring people, why did he drink? Why did he drink? Why did he drink? And we come up with answers which are quite frankly incorrect. But listen, at least they're an answer. We say, well, he drank because he stopped going to meetings, right? And he said, well, why did he drink? Well, I stopped going to meetings, so that's why he drank. But we never quite understand that the real question is, well, why did he stop going to meetings? Or he'll say, I drank because my sponsor moved away. He says, oh, his sponsor moved away. So if I just have a sponsor, he says, but you never ask the question, well, why didn't he get another sponsor? You know what I mean? You never get, and so what the point is no matter what reason a person gives as to why he drinks, whatever the reason is, I stopped going to meetings, I stopped taking an inventory, I stopped continuing, 10 step, I didn't continue doing this, I stopped reading spiritual stuff, I stopped doing this, I stopped doing that. Whatever reason a person gives you as to why he drinks, which is satisfying to him at the time because he thinks he's got it nailed down, so this time I'm going to do it right. We got a lot of people that come in here and they say, well, this time I'm really going to do it. This time, and they do that about 100 times. This is my 18,000th wife trip, but this time I'm really going to do it. You know what I mean? And then, you know something? And then they're sincere. They're sincere when they say that. And what was a real puzzlement to alcoholics is why do they drink and why do they fail when they're actually sincere? You see, you can be sincere. You can really want to do it and still fail. You know why? Because we're powerless. You get it? You know what powerless means? It means it doesn't matter whether you really want to do it. You know what powerless means? It means it doesn't matter whether you really want to do it. It doesn't matter. Your feelings, the feelings you have mean nothing. I mean, just because you feel like you really want to do it, that's not going to sustain you for 33 years. Because to reach a point in time, you know, because next week you're not going to want to do it. Your feelings are like that. They'll vanish like anything. So what you have to understand is there's actually something underneath the reasons. It's not the not going to meetings. It's not the not talking to your sponsor. It's not the not reading the material. There's something underneath that as to why people don't stick. And there's also something underneath that why people sometimes stick here like concrete. There are some people that will be sober until the day they die like concrete and never waver. And that's what you really want to get at. And here's the deal. The secret's in plain sight. It's in the big book. Did you know it's actually in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's all through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's one thing in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that stands out. But you see, if you're an alcoholic, sometimes you don't see these things. You're sort of blind, you know, to these deals. So in any event, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences. And so I want to look a little bit at the consequences of being an alcoholic. And there's a lot of consequences about being an alcoholic that I guess a lot of people can identify. And one of the consequences of being an alcoholic is sort of like illustrated, I guess in a sense, in the story I tell about the baseball field deal when I was about 10 or 11 years old, long before I started drinking, because alcoholism is not about drinking. Now, if you're brand new in here, that probably sounds a little weird. You know, you probably think alcoholism has something to do with alcohol. You know, the name Alcoholics Anonymous sort of implies that, you know. Most people come here because they want to stop drinking. But if you look around AA and check out AA, you'll see that most people in AA actually don't drink. As a matter of fact, you'll actually see most people in AA don't have a drinking problem. Drinking is not their problem. You know, they're crazy, but that's a whole other story. That's the alcoholism. That's the consequences. Because what happens is we come in here, the reason it says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The reason I drank is I didn't drink for the taste. I mean, I like pizza and ice cream. I mean, let me tell you something. You got to develop a taste for scotch. I was a scotch drinker. You try, if you've never drank scotch before, if you've never drank hard liquor before, you just walk up to the bar and you try to swig down a jigger of scotch and see how that works for you, you know? It ain't like vanilla ice cream, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? You got to swig down a lot of it. I'm going to make this sucker work, you know what I mean? I'll make it work, you know? And it worked, it started working. But you see, I drank because I liked the effect. And the effect was I drank because it made me feel better. Feel better than the way I felt. And the way I felt is how I felt wasn't a good feeling. That's why I drank. And the best way to describe the way I felt is when I felt that way when I was sober. See, some people need an excuse to drink. You know, like my wife left me, I lost my job. But I pretty much drank because I was awake. Awake was pretty much good enough for me. You know what I mean? If it was good times I was drinking, it was bad times I was drinking. I just hated being awake and sober. You know, on the planet. And the truth is, you can only sleep so long, you know what I'm talking about? And eventually you wake up, right? You know, and there you are with all the other assholes, you know what I mean? And you hate them, but you hate yourself too, and you don't even know why, and you don't even know there's anything wrong with you, because that's just the way you felt, and you felt that way all your life, and all you know is sometimes you need a drink, you know what I'm talking about? Because the idiot's out there, you understand what the deal is, you know, and so what happens now, we come in here because we because of the symptom, and it even says in the book, it says, alcohol is but a symptom of our disease. Our real disease centers in our mind, not our body. And the disease that centers our mind has to do with the consequences of our drinking. The consequences not of our drinking, the consequences of being an alcoholic. What are the consequences of alcoholism? And another way of talking about the consequences, in a sense, is talking about the old ideas, the old patterns. You know, I love this, you know, I really got involved in this, even though I'm 65, I actually use computers and stuff like that. So I sort of like the way you could sort of like, we're sort of like programmed. Like our programs are messed up. We just got the wrong program, you know. We are, whatever the program is that everybody gets in order to live in this world and not blow your brains out, I didn't get that program, you know what I mean? I got, my program had a virus in it, you know. And you know, and my program is full of these old ideas, but you see, my program is my program and it feels comfortable to me. I run better on my program. My program has to do with, if anything happens around me, I feel sorry for myself. My program, I go into feeling sorry for myself. I'm an if only, I'm a yes butter, I'm a you don't understander, I don't believe this crap is happening to me again, you know, they don't know who the hell they're dealing with, I'll show them, this is a bunch of bullshit, you know, my program is of bad thoughts about myself and other people all the time, just ready to have them, I don't need any reason to have them, it just happens just the way I am, and it all centers around that whole concept of me, 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 me. Me, what's going on with me? How do I feel? And the one thing I always focus on and I worship and I really want to talk about is my feelings. You know, because let me tell you something, my feelings are so important. You gotta listen to me. You know, you gotta listen. Yeah, okay, I raped the gal and I burned down the house, but you gotta understand what happened to me. You know, you understand about my feelings. I'm not a bad person, you know what I mean? And I guess I'm just one sick pup, and I don't have to be drinking. Sure, you're laughing, James. You don't know what it's like. And I don't have to be drinking to have these intense feelings that are solved sometimes by drinking alcohol. I don't have to be drinking. Alcohol didn't make me. I'd like to say, man, I did all these bad things because of alcohol. Alcohol made me do it. You know, listen, the only thing alcohol. Most of the people I hurt in my life, I hurt cold stone sober. The people I disappointed, because if you're an alcoholic, you're an excuse-aholic, you know what I mean? You know, most of the people I disappointed, I was irresponsible with it, I did cold stone sober. And many times, many of the people I hurt, I did it after coming day eight, actually sober, you know what I mean? So I don't need alcohol to be an asshole, okay? The only thing alcohol is to help me live with my sorry self, in my sorry mind, rationalizing stuff, telling myself rationalize, without blowing my brains out, you know, until I was like 31 years old. You know, if it wasn't for alcohol, who knows what would have happened, okay? It just helped me to live life without killing myself. But after a while, it turns on you. And so the idea of having these alcoholic thoughts, these consequences of alcoholism, long before, when I was 10 years old, but not even knowing it, because you don't know what's alcoholism. It's not called alcoholism, it's called Russellism. It's just the way I am. It's just me. I told my sponsor once, he said, you know, you're an angry guy. And you hold everybody to some sort of high standard that you think they ought to act a certain way and be a certain way. I said, well, that's just my personality. He says, Russ, it's your personality that's killing you. Some guy I was just talking to today who lost his bar license and, you know, almost went to jail and was convicted. All sorts of crazy stories and everything like that. And he was sitting at lunch with me and he said he was sentenced to go to AA, but he's not really an alcoholic and he doesn't have a problem and nobody understood. And he tried to convince me as to why it was all wrong and go through this whole thing, and he was being all exercises and the judge was wrong and the cops were wrong and this was wrong and that was wrong. And I said, yeah, but there's something you're missing. He says, what's that? He says, you're crazy. I said, you don't understand, my friend. Dan, you don't understand. Don't try to convince me. I hear you. You're out there. You're yelling. You're saying this guy did this and this, and you could approve it and everything. I understand. But what you don't understand is you're crazy. And I can see you're crazy. And the judge saw you're crazy. And you had a jury trial, didn't you? Yeah. You told the jury what you told me, right? Yeah. And they convicted you, right? I said, because they said this guy is fucking crazy. It doesn't really matter if you're right. You see the way juries work? I know the way juries work. Even if you're guilty, if they like you and they think you have done wrong, you understand? They'll give you like a jury pardon. They'll say, oh yeah, he screwed up. He screwed around with the cops. You know, he's a nice guy. Didn't mean it. We'll let him go. But you see, they heard you and you were talking. I said, this fucking guy is crazy. You got to put him under the jail. And you don't understand that the more vociferous you get and the more you yell and scream about how you're not guilty, the more crazy I see you are. And you don't see you're crazy. You just see you're right. You see, and that's all a consequence of alcoholism. But, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you don't know that's what's going on. You just know you're right and they're wrong and it's not your fault and you're not to blame and blah, blah, blah. And this guy's like 50 years old. You know, we're not talking about a 19-year-old. This guy's been operating with this sort of deal for 50, you know, he's 50. That's how this thing can hang in there. And so I'm in the football field, and, I tell this story, and they're choosing up sides, and I'm in the middle of the field, and you got the two captains, you know, and I'm sitting there in the middle of the field with all these guys, and I'm thinking, you know, please don't let me be last, because, you know, when you're 10 or 12 years old, what they care about is who's the best athlete. You know, the two captains are the best athletes, and I was always a bad athlete. I was always terrible at sports, and I'm just praying, please don't let me be last, because, you know, I didn't want to be the guy that they hated the most, you know, and it seems to me like I was always picked last. I would pray to be second to last. If I was picked second to last, it was like winning the Academy Award, you know what I mean? I didn't want to be that asshole who was sitting in the middle of the thing, and I always was that guy. And then they say something like this, oh man, do we have to have them? Like, they'd rather play with one less, you know what I mean? But here's what happened with that deal. What happened with that deal, and that's life. You know, life is like that sometimes. Sometimes you're chosen last. Sometimes you don't get the job. Sometimes this stuff happens. Very hard to insulate yourself from life. Sometimes you're driving the older car. Sometimes you get fired, the other guy gets hired. I mean, life is like that football field. Life is like that. Sometimes you get the cancer. You know why your wife gets cancer? You don't. Sometimes life is like that. It's like filled with all sorts of vagaries and stuff. Life is like that. And how you react to that has a lot to do with the stuff that's going on. And I would sit there and they'd be laughing at me and joking, you know, the way kids are, you know, and I'd be wanting to die. Because if you're an alcoholic, you've got feelings, and you've got intense feelings. Now, the truth of the matter is, we don't have any feelings that are that much different than regular people's feelings, maybe just a little bit more so. You know, and I guess regular people, you know, when they get those feelings, they may go bonkers or crazy, a lot of things, they just don't drink, you know what I mean? But we just can't handle the pain of growing up and being adults and having responsibility. Life is just really much more painful for us than it's other people seem to sort of glide through shit, be able to do things. They run for office. They raise their hands. They do this. They do that. They do whatever they do. You know what I mean? And it seems to be effortless. And with me, I'm like a duck. The feet are going real fast under the water. Now, I may get somewhere. I may make the money. I may get the law degree and anything. But I'll tell you something. There's a whole lot of feelings going on underneath that. It's a tough deal. And like on that football field, what would happen to me, and I remember this like it was yesterday, is I'd have all these terrible feelings. I wanted to cry. I wanted to run away. But what I would do is when they were laughing at me, I somehow got in my mind that I was so scared. I was worried that if I was to cry or run away or let them know how much they hurt me, that something bad would happen. Now, I can't explain that. And to this day, I can't tell you what would happen that would be bad. Maybe they'd laugh at me more, or they wouldn't play with me, or they'd call me names, or I wouldn't be a man, or whatever it is. But all I knew is the one thing I had to make sure is that they could not see how I felt. So what I did, it was like a natural thing, is I acted like it didn't bother me. As a matter of fact, when they were laughing at me, sitting in the middle like that, I would laugh too, like it was funny. I would laugh sort of like I was sitting there with them, laughing at me. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I made believe like it didn't bother me. So in other words, what would happen is my shield against their laughter and their judgment was acting opposite to the way I felt. And you want to know something? This is kind of strange. I felt it kind of worked. That if I laughed, if I sort of laughed at myself and acted like it didn't bother, it would go away, and they would go away, and they would stop, and it sort of worked. So how did I know that little shield that I built up by acting differently than the way I felt and not letting them see who I was, that little shield, that little one-inch barrier, by the time I was 18 and 20 years old, was going to be 3 feet thick, and nobody was ever going to see how I felt. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you, it got real bad. I didn't even know how I felt or why I felt or what was going on. I just, you know, sort of operated on the planet Earth. And, you know, when you build that barrier between you and other people and you and the world, you know, what you start realizing is that, you know, you're, you know, there's no sense talking to anybody because they wouldn't understand. Nobody would understand because I'm unique. I would kill you with a piece you don't have. Yeah. It's easy for you to say. You don't understand. You don't know what it's like. Because nobody knows what it's like because I'm so unique and I'm so different. So if you're an alcoholic, you're alone. You're alone. Let's face it, you are alone. You know what I mean? You may capture somebody here and there, but the truth is, you know you can't depend on anybody. You know you can only depend upon yourself, you know what I mean? And you're not so sure you're up for the job, you know what I'm talking about? So you're alone. So when you're alone and bad things are going to happen to you, you got to push, shove, yell, do all sorts of crap. You understand what I'm saying? Because you're alone. And you have this incredible thought life, and it's all thinking about you. And there's nobody to share. You never feel like you're connected. You go to the bar and you see all those people in the bar, all those thousands of people, hundreds of people. You know what I mean? You hope they're going to like you. You want to figure out, you know, you worry about what they'll think about, whether you're going to like, whether you can join the group, whether you can join, be part of the group, you know. But you know, I have to have a few, but you know you can, you, so you have a few drinks and you feel like you own the group, you know what I mean? But left to your own devices, you're a loner. You're a loner. You're not a person that's going to have a sponsor. You're not a person that's going to have a mentor. You're not a person that's going to have a home group. You're not a person that's going to go to a meeting every day and share your innermost thoughts. You're not a person that's going to write down a four-step or even think about it. You're not a person that's going to do, you're not a person that's going to do this stuff. You know what you are? You're a thinker. You're a thinker. You know why? Because when you think, nobody has to know what you're thinking. You know what I mean? When you tell yourself you're a piece of shit and you deserve to die and what kind of an idiot am I, and you do all that self-condemnation stuff, which makes you feel bad, you know, you may suspect that they know that you think you're a piece of shit, but the truth of the matter is that's just between you and you. And you don't really share with other people because you're scared to share with other people. And I don't even know where that fear comes from. It says, the big book says, fear is the corrosive thread that runs through my life. All I know, and I didn't realize this. Did you realize before you came today that you're scared shitless of everything that's going on around you? I didn't realize that. You know, I thought I was like John Wayne. But you see, now I know that if you're an alcoholic, you're scared shitless of everything. You're scared shitless of everything. I know you're scared shitless of everything because the big book told me. It said everybody who's in here who says they're an alcoholic is scared shitless. It's a corrosive thread. Don't tell me you're not scared. You're scared of coming up here and sitting here and doing what I'm doing right now. You're scared of doing meetings. You're scared of doing everything. You say things, you don't say I'm scared. You say, you know, because you don't say you're scared, because if you say you're scared, that's like being in the football field and crying. You say things, you make up shit. You say things like, I'm not ready. You know what I mean? I'm not ready. Why don't you just say I'm scared shitless? They'll laugh at me. You know what I mean? I'm not ready. You know, I'm new. You know, whatever. You know, I'm scared. I'm frightened, you know? And so when you're scared, you're like that kid on the football field and you're not connected. And not being connected can lead, that's a consequence. That's an old idea. And that has something to do with selfishness, self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. That's the real basic deal with our alcoholism. That's where selfishness, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self, me. We step on the toes of others, they retaliate. You know, an alcoholic is an extreme example of self will run riot, me, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. It must, or we kills us. It kills us. God, listen to me. God makes that possible. Now, before you run to the doors and call up New York and say there's some guy who's talking about God in AA, I just want to point out to you, that's the AA program of recovery. It's actually in the book. God makes that possible. If you're at a meeting, they're not talking about God, they're not talking about AA. They're talking about some sort of psychological shit that never worked for us. Because we've been through all the psychologists. But the reason they don't want to talk about the God thing is a whole other deal having to do with fear and worrying about what other people think about us, and they'll think we're, you know, because God doesn't get good play out there. He's got a real bad sales team. You know what I mean? Believe me, Evangelina Jolie and Brad Pitt tomorrow came out and they said they were, you know, they loved God or they were born again, everybody in the world would be doing that deal. You know what I mean? Because for us, it's all about the vanity and it's all about the look and it's all about what other people think about us. It's all about whether it's cool or not cool. It's not about whether it works or it doesn't work. It's clear that the non-God thing doesn't work. They're committing suicide, they're doing all sorts of things. It's clear that the God thing works. That's why they have AA. It works, you know what I mean? But the point is, it's not cool. We know it's not cool. So you got to decide whether you want to be right or you want to be happy. Somewhere along the line in here. Whether you want to look cool or you know you want to be happy about yourself and, you know, that kind of stuff. And you want to get rid of these old ideas. And part of the old ideas and the consequence is the idea of feeling alone, being alone, wanting to do things by yourself. That's why, ultimately, I wound up sitting by my record player, you know, listening to the same record over and over again while I was getting drunk, you know, with my incredible thought life, like A Pirate Looks at 40, or Rainy Days and Mondays, or I Miss the Blue, you know, or all that good stuff, you know. You know, on the radio over and over again, thinking about my spot, you know, thinking about that, which is why when it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, and I got some sort of problem and I can't get to sleep, all I do is think about it, and it doesn't make it better, it makes it worse. You give me any alcoholic, you know, has a problem, the first thing he does is tackle it by himself and try to think about it for about 3 days until he drives himself really crazy and somebody suggests, why don't you pray over it, you know? Why would I do that? Why don't you talk to your sponsor? You know, our default is to handle it ourselves and be alone and that kind of deal. So one of the things that, you know, so here's the deal. If that is true, you know, let's forget about the God thing for a second. If it is true, if what I'm saying is true, you got to read this book. If it is true that God makes that possible, that the cure for selfishness is God makes that possible. Here's, by the way, it says here in the book, let me read this to you. You know, if you buy into that, by the way, if you buy into that, it says the following. It says, if you buy into the fact that you got to quit playing God, you know, this is a third step deal, but it actually has to do with the fifth step. It has to do with all steps. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Now, here, you got to ask yourself the question, would you like some remarkable stuff to happen in your life? You know, a guy at the end of the big book, he says, I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got. You know, and he was looking at Bill Wilson. He said, I knew they had this release. I knew they had this, you know, I was sober and he was sober, but I was sober and biting my nails and he was sober and wearing life like a loose garment. You know, you got to ask yourself, what do you want out of this deal? Do you want to be one of these thumb-sucking crybabies that's sober, that's always worried about himself and always scared and always worried about crap? And it's just one more thing. It's always something. Going on, it's always a crisis. Your life is one hell of a novella. You know, you're a real drama queen or king or something like that. Or do you want to be somebody? You want to be one of the men or you want to be the boys? It says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all powerful. Employers with capital E. He's talking about God, the deity. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. In other words, he gives you everything you need. Get this. This is big book stuff. Listen, this is the program of recovery. This is a step meeting, right? Okay, this is the program of recovery. It don't matter whether you believe me. It don't matter whether you like me. It's principles before personalities. It matters what's in this book. This is the program of recovery. I don't know what you think the program of recovery is. I don't know what your groups are telling you the program. I don't know what Well People's Anonymous is. I don't know whether you're going by the wisdom. This is Well People's Anonymous. I don't know whether you're going by the wisdom of the rooms or you think it's some sort of psychological thing. This is the program of recovery. What's in this book? This is the basic text. It says, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. So if you want to be provided what you need in order to get past the fear, here's what you got to do. You got to stay close to him, and you got to perform his work well. He's there. You got to find out who he is. You got to get close to him, and then you got to perform his work because he has work for you. Another fourth step ain't going to help you. Another fifth step ain't going to help you. Another tenth step ain't going to help you. Nothing in this book is going to help you unless you get close to him and perform his work well. Every step in here, you may think it's some sort of psychological thing. Every step is designed to remove the impediments of your being separated from him. Anything that happens to you, any of these promises that happen to you, they happen to you because he's doing for you what you can't do for yourself. If you don't allow him to do, if you want to build up that shield like I did while I was sitting in the field between him and you, you ain't going to get nothing. It ain't going to happen for you. And here's what it says. Established on that footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, isn't that what you want? As we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became, now listen to this, conscious of his presence. Are you conscious of his presence? Let me ask someone, you're alone in the car, who are you talking to? You talking to yourself? Well, you're not conscious of his presence. But it's 3 o'clock in the morning. and you're worried about something, who are you having the conversation with? Are you talking to yourself? Well, you're not conscious of his presence. When you're alone by yourself, when you're outside, when you're walking around, who are you having a conversation with? You're talking to yourself? Well, you're not. You got that old idea going on in your mind. You know something? There ain't much difference between you now and you before you came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You're like me down in the football field. No wonder you're so lonely. No wonder you're so screwed up. No wonder this thing ain't working for you. This is about him. This is about staying close to him and performing his work well. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. You're going to lose that fear. We were reborn. You think I'm crazy about this thing? Let's go to the fifth step in the book. You know what it says? Here's what it says in the fifth step in the book. It says this. Page 6. Page, 72, into action. This is the fifth step, before the fifth step. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do with it? We have been, now listen to this. We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path. I don't know what you think you're supposed to do, but what this book is telling you to do is it's saying if you do this thing right, you're trying to get a new relationship with God and discover any obstacle to that thing and kick it out. Because he's the one who's going to solve your problems. That's why it says in the promises, he's doing for us what he can't do for himself. You don't get that thing accomplished. If you don't understand that thing, you understand? If you're one of these things, you're atheist and agnostic, then just read what Dr. Bob says. If you're atheist, agnostic, or have any other sort of intellectual pride that keeps you from this deal, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly Father will never let you down. And what does that mean? I'll tell you what it means to me. He says, you better be focused on him. You better be focused on this deal. So what does that have to do with the fifth step? Well, apparently, and I don't know this, I don't understand it. Listen to me. This ain't my program. I didn't invent it. I don't make the rules. If it was my program, we'd all be reading Playboy magazine. Trust me. It ain't my program, okay? I'm just telling you what I learned after 33 years. Apparently, and you can look at the steps are up there, right? Is the steps up there behind me? Is the word God in any of those steps? Apparently, God has something to do with this program. You understand? Linking up with him and having a relationship with him has something to do with this program. You know, it has something to do with this program. You don't have him going for you, you know what I mean? You got some sort of problems. And apparently, according to the fifth step, and I don't understand why, you know, one day maybe I'll understand, in order to have a relationship with God, he wants to know what's really, he wants you to confess what's really going on. He wants you to be honest with him. Apparently, God does not like hanging around with liars. Well, I don't know. Do you like hanging around with liars? If you have a friend or somebody you think is a friend and they lie to you and they don't tell you the truth, you say, man, I like that guy. Well, you know, God's sort of like you. He doesn't want to hang around with liars. You know what? He doesn't want you to be a liar. He wants you to be honest. Apparently, honesty has something to do with this, doesn't it? Capacity to be honest. He wants somebody to be honest. That means he wants you to confess to him. And you know something? You know, And, you know, one of the things that apparently has, and I don't understand how this works, but apparently the way God works is he somehow worked it out. Not only does he want you to confess to him, he wants you to confess to somebody else. He wants you to talk to somebody else. Apparently, he doesn't believe you. He doesn't trust you. I know you've told him. I know you said, well, God knows everything anyway. You know what I mean? He says, but he doesn't believe you. He thinks you're holding back. He thinks that's a bunch of bullshit. You know why? Because he thinks you don't even know everything. Because you haven't put any skin in the game. So he wants you to tell somebody else what the deal is. Apparently that's the deal. Then and only then that he believes you're serious about him. And then and only then does that shield start getting weaker and weaker. Does he come into your deal? You know, and if you can't do that, or if you don't do that, or if that doesn't happen, or you fall back from that, because really what the fifth step is, it's a design for living that you're supposed to be perpetrating and perpetualizing it all through your life. You just don't, I mean, you may think you do it one time. The fifth, yes, you do one fifth step, and then the rest of your time in your life, you live your life like a fifth step. You find people that you can talk, you're honest, you're out of the closet, you're giving your deal, you're talking about that deal. Because if you fall backwards, you're back at the football field. Now, what can be the consequences of that? Let me tell you the consequences. Take about 5 more minutes. I'm going to tell you what the consequences are about something that happened today. I sponsor a man and a nice guy. I love everybody. I love all the guys I sponsor. I really do. You know, unfortunately, it doesn't matter whether a guy's a nice guy and I like him regarding sobriety. You know, you sit there and you say, I don't understand, he's a nice guy, he's an intelligent guy, I really like this guy. But that won't keep, you know, my liking somebody will not keep him sober. My loving somebody won't keep, listen, a guy being a nice guy and intelligent, a guy who's really a nice guy, won't keep him sober. Did you know that? I wish it would. It won't. You know what I mean? It just won't. And so I get this call. I haven't heard from him for a while. And I get this call. He's got about 6 or 7 years. And he calls me up and he says, can I talk to you about something? So I'm a little concerned about something. He says, what? So I said, what? I haven't heard from him about 6 months or something like that. I sponsor him. And this is what he tells me. He tells me that, you know, he's been going to see a psychiatrist or something like that. And nobody knows who he is. He's not here. It doesn't matter. You know, it's just, it could be anybody. And that he's been taking these pills. And he's been, now listen, this is where I say it gets controversial. This is not me saying, if you're going to a psychiatrist, you got to stop taking your pills. I don't get into that. I'm not getting between you and your psychiatrist or you and your dealer, whatever it is. I'm not going to get into that. I'm just talking about a principle on something. And he's been taking these pills because he's been feeling kind of anxious and doing this and doing that. And the whole bit. So I, and now apparently, whether he feels guilty or he's feeling he's being dishonest or whatever it is, he wants to talk to me and check on it. He's got a wife, he's got a baby, new baby, he's got a job, he's got the whole deal going. What I've noticed in this deal, in Alcoholics Anonymous, is, you know, when you first come in and you want to do this harder than anything else and you want to give up the drugs and the alcohol and everything and you really hit the ground running. But what happens after a year or two or three? You get the job, you get the wife, you get the husband, you get the baby, you get the family, you get all this stuff, you get the friendship, you get sobriety. And what happens is you come to a fork in the road. You come to a, we all come to a fork in the road. As a matter of fact, every day we come to a fork in the road. And the fork, you know, they have a saying in the Bible, it says you can't serve God and mammon. You can't devote yourself to the world and devote yourself to God. You got to make your choice every day. It seems like a difficult choice, you know. Do you choose God or do you choose the girl? Do you choose God or do you choose romance? Do you choose God or do you choose the car? Do you choose? It seems like a real difficult choice. The entire world is running after the car, the romance, the sex. You know, that's the stuff that's important. That's the stuff that makes you to be a success. That's the stuff, you know, the billionaire. That's the stuff. And or do you want to be like the God thing that everybody's laughing at? And you come to these forks in the road. And sometimes when you're about 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 years sober, and you got the money in the bank, and you got the car, and you got the wife, or you got the husband, you got the girl and everything, it seems like there's just so much to do. It's not like you're abandoning it. I mean, you go to a meeting once a week, maybe twice a week. You know, when things get really bad, you'll call up your sponsor. You don't really sponsor anybody because you just don't have the time, but you're living your life. You know, you just decide to take that fork to the right. That fork to the right, which is down the road of, you know, where all the, well, the stuff is, the pelf, the stuff. You don't take the fork on the left that has to do with God. You know, it doesn't mean you got to be poor or anything like that. You just don't focus on the God thing. You start focusing on things that are important. You start focusing on money and stuff like that. And when you start doing that, it's such a seductive thing. Because you don't automatically start jumping into bars and start drinking or anything like that. You don't do that. You just sort of lighten up. You lighten up on meetings. You lighten up on the sponsorship. You work because you just got a lot of stuff you're doing. You're not doing anything wrong that the rest of the world isn't doing. You understand? And you see, and it may look like you stop going to meetings. It may look like you stop talking to your sponsor. But that's just a symptom. What you really stop doing is you've stopped focusing on God. God is not important to you. It's not really part of your life. Bill Wilson said in that line where they said, you know, where the guy wanted more, that's when Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I've just got to keep talking about it and telling other people. You know, listen, my sponsors, everybody I looked up to, that I hung out with, was doing the same stuff I'm doing now. Every night they were out at AA meetings. They were sponsoring 10, 20, 30, 40 people, hundreds of people. They were like involved in this thing. You know, I mean, I'm just reporting. The guys that I looked up to and had what I had, they were not dilettantes. They were not just doing this sometime. They were like totally immersed in this deal. And surprisingly enough, they held down jobs. They raised families. Apparently it can be done. They just didn't play golf that much or whatever. And I'm not against playing golf, but I mean, you can either spend 4 hours on the golf course or you can spend time in the, I mean, they were just devoted to that deal. They had committed their life. They had turned their will and their life over to the care of God. They were focused on Him and the work. What does it say? Focused on Him and performing the works that He would have them do. What does God want me to do? They became committed to that. Now, here's what's the problem. How does that tie into what this guy's telling me? Because now this guy's sort of going crazy. He's not drinking yet, but he's popping pills. Do you know how many guys I know that have 10, 11 years, 12, 15 years sobriety that went to a psychiatrist and they got pills and they started popping the Xanax, whatever it was, but they weren't drinking, and then 3 years down the road they were drinking again, and then they were gone and they never got back because the brain chemistry was all screwed up? And I said, John, let me tell you something. His name's not John. I said, John, let me tell you something, buddy. I said, how many meetings are you going to? He says, he's going to like one a week, maybe two a week. I said, and I haven't heard from you in a couple of months. He says, no. I said, look, let me explain something to you. I'm not going to tell you whether you should take the pills or not take the pills or whether you should do this or that, but I just need to tell you something. You're not working a program of recovery. You're not working a program of recovery. I said, I'll tell you why. I said, you're not going to meetings. You're not sponsoring anybody, okay? And 3 months after you went to see the psychiatrist, not beforehand, but after you went to see the psychiatrist, after you've been taking the pills, you're calling me up and worried about it. I said, let me tell you what happens with alcoholics. I said, when an alcoholic goes down that second road, the road where the wife, the kid, everything becomes more important, and you get self-involved and stuff like that, the disease doesn't go away. It doesn't like go away on vacation. That selfishness, that disease, that thing doesn't go away. And what happens when you go down that deal, okay, and you become self-involved and you peel away, what happens is you go back to the kid on the football field. You start running your own show. You start handling your own stuff. You stop calling up sponsors or mentors and asking their advice. And here's what happens. As you peel away from Alcoholics Anonymous, and you peel away from the groups, and you peel away, and you seemingly are doing okay because you're sober, you're not drinking, and you're doing that stuff, the disease comes back. But here's the crazy thing. You don't even recognize the disease. What you recognize is that maybe you get a little hyper. Maybe you get a little anxious. Maybe you're not sleeping well at night. Maybe you just notice stuff, you know what I mean? You're impatient. Maybe you have a little fight with your wife or something like that. You're under a lot of stress because of work. Now, let me explain something to you. This is what I've seen. When you're an alcoholic and you have this disease called alcoholism and you're not working a program of recovery and you're not focused on God, by the way, you know how we lose the selfishness? You know, it says, how do we use it? It says, God will take that. God will do that. It doesn't say your job will do that. It doesn't say your girlfriend or boyfriend will do that. It says God. Above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must all, it kills us. God makes that possible. You stop focusing on Him. You stop focusing on Him. You know who you're conversing with in the car? You're conversing with you. You know who you're talking to at 3 o'clock in the morning? You're conversing with you. You know what happens when you talk to you? I mean, listen, have you lived with you? Do you have any idea? I mean, anybody would go nuts talking to you. You know what I mean? And you're talking to you all the time. As a matter of fact, you're not even talking to you. You're talking to 17,000 yous, and they're all living up there, and they're all crazy. A lot of them are crazier than you are. You know what I mean? And you're talking, and here's, you start talking to you. And here's what happens. When you are living with you, and you're not living with Him, listen to this. What happens to you when you go see the psychiatrist, and you start telling the psychiatrist what's happening to you, it looks like mental illness. Do you understand? It looks like mental. It doesn't look to him like you're not sponsoring people. It doesn't look to him like you're not focusing on God. It doesn't look to the psychiatrist that you haven't done a fourth step or a tenth step. It doesn't even look to the psychiatrist that you stopped going to meetings. He doesn't know what the fuck you're talking about. He doesn't realize that there are people as crazy as you are doing wonderfully, but they're like going to meetings and sponsoring people. He does what they teach him to do in medical school. And some of them aren't even taught this stuff. They just have MD at their name. And he says, I don't know what the hell's wrong with you, but why don't you suck on these pills and suck on this stuff, you know, while I treat somebody who's got a real problem, you know what I mean? I'm not even saying there's some good ones, there's some bad ones. But what I'm saying is So what I'm saying is when you stop doing the stuff you're supposed to do, because you're not focused on him, because you don't think he's important, and you never really made that third step commitment. You understand what I'm saying? Then you start focusing on the world, you start focusing on yourself, it's all a package deal, you're talking to yourself, and what happens is you start thinking to yourself, you're saying, well, what should I do? You don't say, I'll call up my sponsor and ask him what I'll do, because he's probably going to tell me I should sponsor people and go to meetings and shit like that, you know what I mean? And I'm too busy for that. So what you do is you go to a psychiatrist to get professional help. You tell him you can't sleep at night, you're going nuts, you got a million things going on. By the way, when I was 8, I was diagnosed with ADHD. I know what's going on. He says, you know, you need some of this Klonopin. You need some of this. You need some of that. And he's got you taking it. And maybe he's right and maybe he's wrong. You're just some guy's guinea pig. And all of a sudden you're popping this stuff and you're 3 months out. And the real question you got to ask yourself is not so much about the pills or whether you should take them. The real question you got to ask yourself is if you're in AA and you're doing this thing, why didn't you at least give me a call before you saw the psychiatrist and say, this is what's happening? You know what I mean? This is what's happening with me. What do you think? To give me the opportunity to say, get off your ass and sponsor me and go to more meetings. I mean, it doesn't cost as much, I know, as a psychiatrist. I mean, what if I'm right? What if you go to meetings and you start sponsoring people and all of a sudden you start feeling good about yourself? What if all the symptoms go away? You know, what if I'm right? All the symptoms go away. And here's what you're dealing with. If that's the deal and you go the other direction, you know, you go Dow Chemical, you know what I mean? Better way of living through chemicals, you know what I mean? You know, and let me tell you something. You could have 5 years, you could have 10 years, you could have 15 years. You start getting dependent on that stuff, change your brain, all sorts of stuff can happen. You know, and it's all about, and here's the crazy thing, if you think about it, how did that happen? And the way it happened with him, if you think about it, is he started running his own life. What does it say? First of all, we had to quit playing God because it didn't work. I know people may put down sponsors, I'm not saying I'm God, but the bottom line is, I don't know about playing God, but I know one thing, when at least you have a sponsor or somebody you go to, it's very hard to play God when you're asking somebody else, what should I do? Does that make any sense? And when you stop asking somebody else, what do you think, what should I do? You know what I mean? You're getting ready to take over. You know? You're getting ready to take over. And as soon as you start getting ready to take over, then you're talking to yourself and you're getting counsel from yourself. And then you know what you are? You're alone. You're separated. You're out there and you're separated. And you could be with a crowd of people like this. You don't feel like you could share with anybody. And the longer you're separated, the worse it gets, the harder it is to get back. And the next thing you know, you're going to psychiatry, you're going here, you're going there, you're going everywhere but where you should go, you know, in the first place. And when you think about it, the whole reason, and you're not sharing. You're not really sharing. You're not even sharing in the groups. It's not like you're going to an AA meeting every day and you're saying to your group, he says, I start going to a psychiatrist, I'm taking, you know. You're not, you're like alone. And now you can't talk to anybody. You know why? Not even an AA, because they wouldn't understand. Because they wouldn't understand. They might laugh at you. They may chuck you. You with me? And it's all about, when you think about it, it's all about third step stuff. It's all about fifth step stuff. It's all about a failure to do that deal. Being separated out. So do you really want to have 10 years sobriety or 15 years sobriety or 3 years sobriety and feel like you're out there on the limb somewhere alone? Or do you want to feel connected? You know, I mean, let me tell you something. There's a freedom in feeling connected. You know, one of the things you can do when you feel connected and you lose the fear is you can have relationships with people that are unbelievable. Like I have a relationship with you guys. You see, I might want you to imagine this. I sit here at this meeting. What is there, like 100 people, 150 people, whatever it is? And I know a lot of you people, and some of you people I don't even know. And I can share with you my innermost thoughts. And I'm just so happy to be here to talk to you about stuff that's going on in my life, you know. And this is the way I am every day with everybody in my life. I mean, it's sort of pathetic when you think about it. But, you know, I mean, you know, the cops are saying, shut up, you're going to get the speeding ticket anyway. I don't want to hear about, you know, what happened in the baseball field, okay? But what I'm saying is, you want to have a life where you're comfortable with yourself, where you're comfortable with people, where you're not running around with the secrets and all that sort of stuff, and you're feeling alone, you know what I mean? Where you're not having those crazy conversations with yourself. I still get them every once in a while. It ain't perfect, you know what I mean? And, you know, it happens. But you know when it happens to me? It's an unusual thing. And I'll tell you, it's almost a good thing when it happens to me. You know, I almost actually, in a strange way, sort of like it when I start thinking crazy thoughts in a weird way. Because the other day something happened and I got mad at myself. And I really started thinking bad thoughts. You know, I mean, you're such an idiot. Why did you do that? And the reason, because it reminds me that I'm an alcoholic. Because I say to myself, I say, man, that's the disease. That's what's waiting for you. You know what I mean? If you leave this thing, you still got it. I don't ever want to lose that reminder. But then I can say to myself, I say, you know something? You know, and then I can start talking to the guy I really like talking to, the God of my understanding. I can talk to him. He's cool. He says, don't worry about it. You're trying to do the right thing. It ain't no big deal. Don't worry about what they think and everything. I love you. You just keep going forward trying to help those people. I can talk to him. You see, I can have a conversation with him. And then everything works out. Right? So, God bless you all. Thank you very much.